Hi everyone and welcome to First Rank Fire. This is a podcast that gives me the chance to chat with some of the best people from around the 40k community. Before I kick off, I will say that I am a little bit ill and so you can probably hear that in my voice. But I am your host Ben and in today's episode we're going to be chatting with one of my favourite painters in the community. I'm pretty sure he's painted almost every army across both 40k and Heresy, including some incredible pieces for the likes of Maxine and Tabletop Tactics. I mean, that Lord of Skulls is possibly one of my favourite models on Instagram. It's absolutely incredible, absolutely stunning. Welcome to the show, James, aka Poseidon. Yeah, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm really good, actually. I think I was ill a week before you, so it's it's travelled around, and now you've got the sexy husky voice. I'm just kind of recovering, so...
Yeah, maybe it'll bring in more listeners and then they'll listen back to my old ones and be like, who's this maniac?
Who's this guy? Yeah.
Yeah, like bring back the huskiness. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm really good. Back to working, painting, so can't complain when you get to sit and paint models all day, really, do you?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, it's the dream for all of us, apart from those people who do it for like 15 hours a day, like you, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. You get used to it, to be fair. I mean, once you build up to it and, you know, yeah, it doesn't bother me. I try and make sure I get my steps in and get a bit of training in, because otherwise you can sit all day and then you get up, your back's a bit sore and you think, I've barely moved today. I've been productive painting, but like I've barely moved. So it's getting a bit of a balance, I think.
Yeah, you've got like 15 steps on your step counter. And
Well, we've got two golden retrievers, so I try and get like, I try and walk them, get them a big one in the morning, get most of my steps for the day. And then when I finish, and I don't have to go as far then, and then I can either go to the gym or whatever, but otherwise you just don't get it done, so.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, I'll crack straight into the questions. So, what originally got you into Warhammer?
I guess I'm one of those, probably like a lot of people, where I started Warhammer and then went away from it, so I actually did it. It was my dad initially. We went to a little, it was like Heath's Toy Master, like the little store where the, I don't know if that's like a common way. Everyone's going to know what Heath's or Toy Master is. But yeah, it was like a stationery store, and upstairs had like models and board games. And it was all like, you know, the little blister packs.
Yeah.
So I remember going in, they were all metal and everything on there, looking at like all the different Ogrins and Bulgrins and all this kind of thing. Realising the money from your paper round wasn't enough to afford any of them. But yeah, that was it. So I got like a first set for Christmas. I can't remember what edition set it was. It was like Space Marines and Drakari, or Dark Elder as it was like the starter set. Had some plastic trees and bits in it. And that was it. And then that was kind of the first start of Warhammer for me.
Yeah.
Did it for years and years. Never really knew how to play the game, just painted models.
Yeah.
You play with your mates and make up the rules.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm older, 6 year dead type thing. But and that was it. And then, yeah, I guess like 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, I got back into it again and obsessed again. It's weird how you have that big gap in the middle. But
yeah, it feels like there's almost that period of life where you kind of like, I have so many other things to do and you maybe don't have.
Yeah.
You kind of have enough money, but not quite, because you're going to spend it on other things like drink and stuff like that. And then you become an adult, you go again, and you kind of go, oh, I have a little bit of disposable income. What can I use it for? Little bits of plastic.
Yeah, I think it's weird, isn't it? Because, yeah, I guess from, like, 18 to whatever, mid-20s, late 20s, like, I'd never even thought about doing Warhammer again. So I can't remember even what it was that, you know, kind of got me back to it. I must have just seen something, or it must have just called to me to go back to painting. I'm not sure. So
I mean, It seems to be a thing. I've chatted with a lot of people, and a lot of people had that sort of gap, and it's always like you overheard a conversation, or they'd sort of been keeping an eye on Warhammer in the background, or like something and showed up, like, oh, is that Warhammer still a thing? Or, I don't know, you walk past a store or whatever. Excuse me. There always seems to be that little trigger. Mine was just overhearing a conversation. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's always that little trigger. You go, oh, yeah, that was a thing I used to do. I should look back into that.
Did you take that gap as well, the 10-year gap that everybody seems to take?
Mine was probably a little bit bigger than that. So I started in Fantasy, I think it was 4th edition. I've had to look this up since, because I've talked about this over quite a few times, but I got the Orc Empire box set, like the starter box set, which I think is the 4th edition box set. Played that for a little while, at probably like the age of 12 or 13, something like that. And then I didn't come back into it until probably like my late 20s. So probably like 15 years, the gap was swimming.
Yeah, it's, everyone seems to have had it, though. I don't know that many people that have just been consistent right through.
I think Scorry might be the only person that I've spoken to. So this will be episode 26. I think in 26 episodes, he might be the only person who's just gone right through.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of dabbled. I was doing 40K, and then I got really into like the Lord of the Rings as well, and painted. Yeah. That's one regret. Like, I had a massive Uruk-hai army, and they had like the big movement trays.
Yeah.
All the movement trays were based, so when the models were in, you couldn't tell they were in trays.
Yeah.
And it was like a huge army. It was kind of a Helm's Deep recreation.
Nice.
And I remember selling it, and then I was like, pretty sad. I know I'd probably want to repaint it anyway, so.
It's always the way. Mine's the same. I had a massive orcs army. And yeah, left that with my parents. And then eventually they were like, we've still got this thing in the loft. Can we just sell it? I was like, yeah, no problem. I'm never going to go back to that. Just sell it. And yeah, with Old World coming back, I'm like, oh man, I could definitely have used some of those.
Especially with those models, you can easily strip them and repaint them as well, can't you? So. Well,
most of them are metal, so they're ready for it. Like the old metal fanatics, which I don't know how on earth anybody balanced those. Like big metal balls on the end of these things, trying to get them to stand up on like a tiptoe.
People
these days with like the assault intercessors and stuff like that and tactical rocks don't know what they had when they're compared to those fanatics.
I know. The hardest I've had it is with my sister's army. Like, I think I've got like 20 Seraphim and 20 Zephyrim. So it's the flights trying to position them and then try and move them. Normally you're deep striking them into a small space as well. So it's trying to balance them in so they can get down without being in range and they're all falling over. So the joys of flight stands.
Yeah, it feels like GW are moving away from flight stands a lot more now and going into the leaping off a rock or whatever.
Yeah, mine are all like copper rod.
Yeah.
Because I broke a few flight stands and then just bought a load of 2mm copper rod and just cut it, painted it black.
Yeah.
Does the job, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen loads of people use like the... you can get like the jump pack, like full of fumes and stuff like that.
Yeah, the smoke plumes, yeah.
Yeah, they're really cool. That's a good way of doing it.
Yeah, we did some, a Blood Raven's army not long ago, and it had, there was only three of them actually, but if they're painted like, you know, you can put a lot of effects on the fire and the smoke plume, so it adds quite a lot to the model as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, I've got our next question, and I think I probably know the answer to this given your profession. But what would you consider your favourite part of the hobby to be?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, I did go through a phase that like I absolutely loved playing. I still enjoy playing the game, but yeah, for me, painting's like massive. To be honest, I'm not. This might be a shock horror year of commission painting. I'm not a massive fan of building models.
Fletch did the exact same thing, and then and now I'm like, okay, yeah, fair.
Me and Fletch usually moan to each other about. Building models, to be fair. But yeah, I mean, I think last time I always say this to Fletch, last time I was building intercessors, if you put pouches and everything on, it's about 19 pieces for one intercessor. Yeah. So yeah, I think I enjoyed it more when the kits had less pieces, but also I wasn't as critical of mold lines, drilling barrels, bits of sprue. Whereas now it's going over every single piece with a hobby knife, you know, to smooth it, to give you a better surface. So 100% for me painting. And I went, it's all of it really. Like I enjoy painting armies. Obviously there's different challenges with.
Yeah.
It could get a bit tedious if you didn't keep yourself sort of stimulated with the project. Painting single miniatures is, you don't have that problem. You're not edge highlighting one thinking, oh, I've got another 60 to do, you know? Absolutely love it. Like, obsessed with painting models, to be fair. So, more than happy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously, it's your job. If you didn't love it, then you kind of probably wouldn't be doing what you're doing for a living, given that you did have a career before. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, quick overview. Like, I was in the army first.
Okay.
So I did, I started in military police and then I went close protection unit. Mm-hmm. So I did bodyguarding basically. So I did a few different, you do like green tours, which is for the British Army, and then you do black tours, which is Foreign Commonwealth Office.
Okay.
So I did that. And then from there, when I left the army, I had like young children and things. So I went in the fire service, and loved it. Like I did that for years, to be fair. Yeah. But it's strange because I never thought I'd leave the fire service. Like I, you know, you're kind of working your way up. I went from like firefighter to being in charge of fire engines to being an instructor at the training school and teaching new recruits and things like that. But yeah, the turning point, I guess for me as well, I always wanted to kind of go full time and do my own business. And it's a leap of faith sometimes, isn't it? You're a bit worried about what it's going to be. So the kind of what made me sort of really go for it is when, I mean, everybody had COVID, you know, the lockdown and things like that. And when we got our vaccination, my wife had got ill from her vaccination.
Oh, man, that sucks. So
it gave her something called Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is like a neurological thing. She's fine now, I'll cut to the end. But, but she was waking up with like paralysis and things like that. And
shit.
But they didn't know what this was because it didn't, it does exist, but it was only like one in 100,000 people would get it.
Super cases, yeah.
Yeah, but that was it, the pre-COVID vaccination. But after that, then there was a lot of people getting it as a side effect. So now when you get a vaccination, it's actually in the small print of one of so yeah, it was like a neurological thing, and they thought it might be motor neuron disease and all these kinds of things. And obviously it wasn't, and she's improved massively. She's back to basically normal now. That's with good. A couple of, but it kind of just made us, we had a conversation. She said, life's too short. If you want to just do it, like just go for it. And I thought, you know what? Like, so I think everyone at work was pretty shocked when I would just said, I'm handing my notice in, I'm going to start Poseidon and I'm doing it full time and that's it.
So, did they know about like your painting? Because I assume you were doing like commissions on the side of that as well.
Yeah, so I used to do commissions on the side, and even to be honest, I'd do them at home and on my days off, and sometimes on a night shift if it was really quiet, everyone would be like, you know, sleeping or watching TV, and I'd be sitting painting models. I mean, it's one of them. There's no kind of shame for me about, you know, painting models, but you have that weird, or you had that weird thing, I don't know, where you don't tell people about it. Like, I think we're getting away from, you know, you get kind of a bit embarrassed. Definitely. Oh, yeah, yeah, to say, like, yeah, I'm 35 and I paint sold, like. So, yeah, I didn't really tell anyone at work. And there's a shift of like 15 guys to say, I'm just going to go and paint some soldiers, and everyone look at you and think,
what are you on about? Are you okay?
So no, it wasn't kind of openly, I didn't really tell everyone where I was going. I've told the people I work with and stuff, and you kind of get to a point, I think as you get older as well, it was more when I was in my 20s, you were a bit shy about it. As I got older, you get more comfortable in yourself and you don't really care what other people's opinion is if you're happy with it, you know, so.
Yeah, I think there's a mad stat. Like, I think like men's brains are fully formed until like 27 or something like that. Yeah. So that's when you start to really sort of be like, oh no, this is who I am, and I'm quite happy to accept who I am. I was much the same.
I've had that conversation a lot with, like with my wife, or I've had it with Fletch as well, because he's a bit younger than me. You know, where you say, you talk about your life and things that have happened, and you think, well, when I look back at it, you think you're an adult from 18, but you're just not, are you?
You're really not. Yeah.
Like, I feel like in my 30s, I'm kind of the person I wanted to be, and I'm happy and content. And yeah, it's funny how it changes with where you kind of get to.
Yeah.
But apparently, as you get older, you care even less. So.
Take that. Yeah.
We'll see where that goes, but yeah. But happy enough. I just told everyone I was leaving, basically. And just went for Poseidon full time. Because I think if you give yourself a safety net, you don't necessarily commit 100% to something.
Yeah, for sure.
So I just thought, that's it, full steam ahead. Try and get some commissions in and go from there, basically.
Yeah, nice. That's cool. I mean, you have painted a lot of different armies, like I said in the sort of intro, a lot.
Yeah.
Have you, have you got a favorite army in let's call it in 40k? Do you have a particular favorite?
So there's a few. I mean, most of them. I do get that thing. I'm quite bad for when they release something new. I want to paint it. Like, yeah. Especially at the minute, it's like the new Cadian box set that's coming with the two.
Vogeldon.
I love the Vogeldon tank. But for me, when I was growing up, like I say, looking at the blisters on the shelves and not being able to afford them, I really wanted Sisters of Battle. Wanted a Sisters army. So that was the first army, or one of the first armies that I painted for myself, which is my army that's, it's on some of our social media where it's kind of the green marble basin and there's a lot of purple capes and green power blades. I went super bright, vibrant colours on it. So yeah, it was Sisters for quite a long time and I love playing the army. The only things for me, like it's a lot of models to move around. And from when they just die easily, so you feel like you're scooping them off all the time at toughness 3, scooping them off the table. So the last army I painted for myself was the Emperor's Children / Creations of Bile with the, you know, like the patchwork paneling. So that, I think at the minute that is my favourite at the moment. Like I absolutely love playing them, but I've played them as Emperor's Children, but I think I want to next. I've got some big models that are converted to add to the army. And then I kind of like as well when I get into an army to learn a bit about the lore of it. So I've been listening to like the Fabius Bile audiobooks and things for the Creations. So yeah, I think that's next. Get the Creations army done. Put some like weird mutations and things in there.
Very cool.
Yeah. It's just it's time consuming trying to find time to paint them. But you're giving yourself a bit of a deadline, you know, to work to. With your own projects, because sometimes you can work flat out on armies, and then your own things you kind of sort of procrastinate on doing it. And so,
Well, there's not money attached to it, is there? I guess so. It's like the kind of money comes first because it is your living, I guess.
Yeah, it's not linked to the success of your business, is it? Painting your own models, you know. So you end up sitting in front of the telly building something and 3 hours later, you haven't built it. And...
really, you just described me. Yeah.
That's what you do, though, isn't it? You get the glue out and you get the bits, and then you've got 3 bits done, and you put it all back in the box, and you thought to yourself, I was definitely getting that box finished, definitely getting them done. And but yeah, it's. I think the chaos and the creations of Bile at the minute's kind of got to be top of my list for sure.
That's cool. Yeah. So that the Morlathine that's on your that's pinned to your Instagram that's your model for your army.
Yeah, so there's 2 of those.
That's cool.
I took the army to no retreat in Gibraltar. And I have the 2 Morlathines are kind of the big, and then there's a low discordant, but it's he's kind of riding a big sort of dinosaur type thing. But next for that, I've got a couple of other things. I've got a Land Raider that's converted, load of cool Emperor Children-y type things going on. And then I was using the, I can't remember the name now, the Goliath Maulers, is it, from Necromunda, you know, the bikes?
Yeah.
So I've painted 2 of those because I've converted them into Chaos Space Marine bikers.
I've seen them, they've done before, they're really cool.
Because obviously, Space Marines have got like Outriders and Chaos Bikes are still like about that big, aren't they?
The little diddy trikes that they've got. Yeah, the kiddie bike. Yeah.
So I'm kind of working on those at the minute. And there's a couple of other things. I'm kind of just going to wait until I paint it to kind of post it, really. But
yeah.
Mainly because if I post it, then I don't get around to painting it for 6 months.
Yeah.
People say, what happened to that Land Raider? I'm like, oh yeah, it's in the back. Just keep posting work in progress pictures of I've undercoated it and that's about it. So
that's 90% of my posts because I get so little time to actually paint these days. It's just like, here's a post of it grey, now it's primed, here I've painted 1 pattern. That's like 90% of my posts.
Yeah.
That's just my life.
I kind of find a lot of people as well though. Like you see the models and you get really excited and you buy way more than you need. You build them all, you get them all laid out and you think this is going to look amazing. And then you start painting like the first squad and you outface yourself straight away, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna undercut or airbrush the entire army, which, if you follow through with it, it makes sense because it's a faster process. But once you get to that first one, you start blocking in the details and it still doesn't look that good, then it ends up on EVA, doesn't it? Like, the whole army, so.
I've got a Votan army just like that. To be fair, that was going from 9th to 10th, but I've got a based purple Votan army. I've done a little bit of one, not touched them since the end of 9th, mainly because I wanted to really focus on my Chaos Knights. So yeah, I've got about a 2,000 point Chaos Knight army fully painted now and based everything like that, so I'm quite happy with that. And then Dark Angels have sort of taken over my life since then. I don't know why. I liked Dark Angels before, but for some reason I got to the back end of painting that like 2,000 point of Chaos Knights. So I just went, oh no, I want to try do some Dark Angels. Painted some Deathwing, and it's just like, oh cool, the Deathwing like my favourite models in the whole thing. And then like the Lion came out, and Azrael, I was just like, oh my god, this is incredible. Later, I'm just sat there. They're purple. I can put them on the table. They're not grey, but yeah.
Dark Angels have gone crazy now, haven't they? Like with I mean, I know they've always been kind of up there.
Yeah.
But like, I think the Lion really kicked it on as well. Everybody wants to paint the Lion, and
so, yeah, it's an incredible model. But yeah,
yeah. I haven't actually painted him yet, but he's next on the table that I've got the Lion to do. So that'll just be. It's not even a chore when you sit and paint something like that, you know. Once you kind of get going and get into it, you can lose a week easy. So.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I can't wait to see a Lion. I've obviously seen Fletchers, and seen quite a few. I think the Warhammer girl, Rach, her Lion as well is top notch.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're all inspiration for when I finally get around to mine. When I finally get brave enough to open that box and put it together.
That's it. Yeah. And then build it and then get too intimidated and
just leave it on the shelf for about 4 weeks, yeah.
Put it in a plastic tub in sub-assemblies and then forget about it.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Although I might get quite excited to play him, so that might actually drive me to do something. Yeah.
I presume his rules... to be honest, I haven't played any 10th edition.
Okay.
Just because of work, you know, I haven't really had time. I mean, I used to go to, like, my local gaming club once a week. Not that I ever went every week, you know, but it's on, like, once a week, and I used to go and play quite a bit, but it's just, you end up, it's on a Thursday night, and then end up, you know, I've painted late, and then by the time, it just doesn't happen, so.
Yeah.
I'd like to get back to playing a little bit more, especially even just trying out 10th with my army to see how it performs, you know, so.
Yeah. That would be probably quite good.
Yeah, it'd be handy to know. I mean, it's still a legal list, but I've spent ages working on the bikers, and they don't even take up that many points in your army, you know.
Bikes seem super cheap in 10th so far.
Well, I was going to run them in 9th edition, and they had the bikers with the black mace and all these kind of things, so it was a super strong unit, and I actually just don't know if that's a thing anymore. Just because you get rusty quick, don't you, if you don't stay kind of in it with the game.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's probably one of the good things the GW's done. I know loads of people hate it, but I absolutely love like the erratas and the FAQs and stuff like that. I think it moves the game on really quick, and it means actually you kind of lose touch quite quickly. But at the same time, at least they're trying to fix problems for me.
Yeah.
It's a good step.
I like it. I just struggle with, and you can say we'll stop it next edition, but it just can't happen because you've always got to level things out, right? So the amount of documentation you need to play when you've got your rulebook, your codex, your FAQs, your erratas, you know. So even to jump in right now to 10th, even though I was pretty like all fair with playing 8th and 9th, it's still like, right, so where do I start? So I get a rulebook. Oh, there's codexes. Oh, but Chaos I haven't got, you know. And it's trying to figure it out. So for someone brand new, it's quite tricky to know what to buy. You can end up buying the old rulebook on eBay accidentally and, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
But once you get into it, you've got to keep up, haven't you, I think?
Yeah, so. It's a shame that they put the app behind the paywall. I think the updates that they made to the app coming into 10th were really good, really, really strong. I love the list building and the rules are really cool. To put that behind a paywall for me was a bit of a silly one for me. But
If you just gave everybody access to that, it makes it easier, right? Like, for more people are going to want to play the game. And so, no, I agree on that, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably still buy a codex because they bring all these nice, beautiful codexes. They've got like, yeah, lore and a lot of that stuff in there. I'd probably still pick one up just for that side of it. But yeah, it feels like a bit of a silly mistake putting up. And the fact that it's like, you need to pay to get Warhammer Plus to be able to get access to the app more, so you get more list building. And then you have to go and buy a codex anyway and then get the code from it and then put the code in to get your actual codex on the app. I'm like, this is silly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what's the point?
Yeah, it needs streamlined, I think. I think it was maybe launched a bit too early. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if everything was ready, you know. And yeah, it's a little bit disjointed, isn't it, trying to get everything in place.
Yeah. It feels strange that they're not just gone to, like, you can buy a code. I know they used to, didn't they? I think it was it during 8th they just had the, you could buy a virtual codex.
Yeah, yeah.
They've moved away from that again, which just seems really strange to me.
Yeah, I think, like, the first virtual one was, like, Chaos Space Marines Mark II codex.
Yeah.
Because I do a good thing when I think about all these armies I'm going to paint is I buy the codex, you know, and you get excited and build a list, and then you don't build the list. So you end up, so I had like Drukhari at one point, and I think I had Eldar, and they were still in the wrapping, you know, because it was an intention. I think like they brought out Howling Banshees, and I was like, yes, like I remember them from playing the old, I used to play the old, I don't know if you remember it, the Dawn of War PC game before. But it was, you know, you have the Dawn of War game where you're the Blood Ravens.
Blood Ravens, yeah.
There was one, and I don't know whether it was PC or whether it was an older console, where you'd play and it was like a hexagonal map and you moved round.
Yep.
But you were,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You were Eldar and you were against like Blood Angels. Yeah, I don't know if it must have been 15, 20 years ago. I think it was called Dawn of War as well, but it was like a.
I think you're right.
PC game. You had like the fire dragons and striking scorpions. And every time you like attack someone, it did a little,
yeah,
a little slash effect on the screen and stuff like that. So that got me. From then, I absolutely love, like, you know, your Howling Banshees and your fire dragons and stuff. So yeah, buy the codex, don't paint the army.
Another story of my life. Yeah, that's for sure. Okay. I love your Instagram, and you've painted a million and one different models. Have you got a favourite to put you on the spot? It doesn't have to be for you, okay? It could be heresy or anything else that you've done.
That's tough, you know. It's hard. It's hard to... Because there's just so many amazing models. For me, I mean, I absolutely love Celestine because I love the sisters.
Yeah.
And she was one of the first models I painted as like a competition piece.
Okay, yeah.
So I loved Celestine. But one of the most fun things I've painted in a long time is that Lord of Skulls / Lord of Iron for Beard.
Love that model.
Because he bought it on eBay and it was... a real mess, like covered in paint, like layers and layers of paint, and but that made it like more fun, you know, because he did a little bit of converting on it, and then he sent it to me, and then I stripped it, and then did some more converting, and like sanded the dozer blade because it had the skulls. I was trying to decide what to leave of the skulls because it was cool, but I didn't want the corn symbols all over it, so like. Cut and sanded, got the Dremel out and sanded everything off.
Days.
But like that front dozer blade's normally got the corn symbol and it's full of skulls both sides. So I sanded it and then green stuffed it smooth.
Good effort.
To then do like hazard stripes on one side, and then it's got like the sort of the red glow coming out of the vents. It was super fun to paint. But sometimes I think you look at a lot of models you paint and you look at where you would improve it. As you get better,
yeah.
But I just look at that and think, yeah, it looks cool. Like it's, I love seeing it when they use it in battle reports and stuff, you know. So
yeah, it looks incredible on screen. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most fun things I've painted recently. I've also got that I'm excited to paint is Angron.
Oh yes, yeah. But yeah, I'd love to paint him.
He's been sitting, but I don't want to get it out and rush it or not complete it. So I think, like, if over Christmas I have a little bit of time where I'm, you know, doing my own things, I might try and paint Angron then or something.
Yeah.
I'd
say it's a palette cleanser, but can you call Angron a palette cleanser?
Yeah. Yeah, a palate cleanser usually only takes a small amount, really, doesn't it? What about you? What's your favourite?
Do you know what? I really love the... my mind's gone completely blank. All I can think about is Desecrator, but it's not a Desecrator. The Psychic Knight, the Psychic Chaos Knight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love that model. I think the tail on it's really cool. As much as I hate it when I move it around and stuff like that, and in games, as a model, that's the model that got me into Chaos Knights. I had knights before, and I kind of ran them as like rogue knights, almost like somewhere in between Chaos and Imperial, so I could run them anyway. When that model came out, I was just like, I have fallen to Chaos. Between that and the War Dogs, yeah, I definitely fell to Chaos there.
The Chaos Knights are so much cooler, to be honest, aren't they? Like,
yeah.
The kits and everything, like the new ones they brought out, the War Dogs, they're awesome. So
yeah. So that's probably, I mean, because I love a big model. I mean, I've got Mortorion, he's finished. I've got Magnus, he's mostly finished. Don't own the armies, I just love those models.
Yeah.
And then I'm really looking forward to the Lion. That for a long time, the Deathwing Knights have been my favourite models in 40k. They're quite old, but. They're Terminators, and they're beastie, and they have maces and shields and iconography, and I absolutely love them. So, yeah, the Lion might take the first spot when I finally get him painted up.
That's literally what I've been painting today, Deathwing Terminators. So.
Incredible. I love the models so much. There's so much detail in them and so much flavour. I really hope that they give them a bit of a refresh when they bring out the Dark Angels Codex for 10th.
Mm-hmm. Shoot, yeah, you think so, like... Yeah, I mean, a lot of the models hold up fairly well for the Dark Angels, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, they still look cool, but a new sort of upscaled version with all that iconography? What's the word?
Iconography.
There you go, that one. it'd be a good kit, and it'd give you a load of extras for, like, kit bashing on your Marines and everything, so.
Yeah, that's the thing. I got the new Leviathan Terminators, and I had some leftover like tabards and things like that from the Terminator, the Deathwing Terminator kit. So I kit bashed those, and they are still grey. I've not painted them yet, but they were the first ones that I was like, yeah, let's properly try and kit bash them into Deathwing Terminators. And I think they come out really nice. They're really, really cool. Same with the Ravenwing. I've kit bashed some Outriders with some Ravenwing bits, and I think they look really cool. I think a true Outrider Ravenwing Knights kit would be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like massive on too much of the lore. Like, I don't know all the backstories, but I've read quite a lot of the Heresy books, and I can't remember, is it like book 4 or 5 that's the Dark Angel, the Lion?
Yeah.
And it's like super cool when you get, problem is you read one of those books and whatever army it's about, that's you ready to go and start collecting it, right?
Yeah, so many times I've nearly started like an upgraded or a new 40k Horus army.
Yeah,
because go back to those first three books. I'm like, oh my god, Tor'Gadon and Loken, absolutely love them. If they were loyalists, they'd be amazing. Primaris, Sons of or Lunar Wolves would be incredible.
Yeah, Lunar Wolves. Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, you end up obsessed with certain armies, don't you, when you go through the books.
Luckily, most of what I think I've read 15 or might be up to like 16 or 17 books. Most of them, about a third of them, are Dark Angels. Similar to you, I'm like, I really want to paint this army. Let's get a book, and it really gets me into it.
Yeah, I was trying to read them in order and kind of make myself do it, but you sort of see one that's maybe something you're not that in. Like, I think the one where I stopped was I went all the way in order, and I think it might be book 7 or something. It's an Admech book.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't mind Admech, but I kind of started the book. I wasn't into it and just jumped. Then I just thought, there's that many, just jump around and kind of read what. I think I started like the Primogenitor, the Fabius Bio books and things after that. So yeah, you kind of just jump around, don't you, with different ideas.
I did it with Dark Angels because I just jump around with it. So I tried to follow those in chronological order for the most part. Yeah, it's kind of whatever I fancied. Like you're saying, I came into it. I didn't start playing 40k until I was an adult. And at that point, I think there were like 3 or 4 books from the end. So I looked at it and went, well, I'm never catching up. So I have to start. And I've read part 1 of The End and the Death. I know that as we're recording this, The End and the Death came, part 2 came out like 2 days ago or something like that.
Yeah.
I've not got it yet. And I'm trying to avoid spoilers everywhere.
Yeah. No, I haven't. Yeah. you want to try and kind of get the main ones, don't you, that give you the main story of what's yeah. happened and what's happened. But the first one was absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was so good.
Yeah.
Really good.
I think that those, for me, the first three books really kind of give you that character drive. Because you start off like loving Horus. You think he's really cool.
Yeah.
And so quickly you're like, oh, he's such an idiot. He's such
yeah.
a idiot. Is he listening to that? And then Abaddon as well.
Abaddon. Yeah, Abaddon's good in it.
I love him at the first one. I think this is the third one where he takes, spoilers if anybody's listening, looks at like 30 yeah. years old. It's not really spoilers.
Too late. You should have read it by now, yeah.
Yeah. Except the way he's like, he wants to take Horus to Davin to heal him. I'm like, why have you become such a whiny little person? I loved him. He was like such a strong sort of moral character. And even when you look at like the new stuff about like him being the War Master, like him starting off as the War Master, he's this really strong-willed character. And you're like, yeah, but anytime anything goes wrong, you become a whiny little so-and-so. So grow a backbone. Like, yeah, I don't... Sometimes I love Abaddon, sometimes I hate him.
I still love him, but yeah, I know what you mean, because he starts, when they're in like the Mournville and everything, like fighting together, you're like, yes,
yeah.
It's awesome. Then it starts to crack apart, but it's... Yeah, I do like Abaddon. I think more where he ends up is quite, you know, when he's just full Black Legion.
Yeah.
Once you get, like, it's pretty good once you get to those kind of ones.
Yeah, the lore of him, like, disappearing into the warp and then, like, travelling around and sort of growing that warband to become, like, who he is and the morals that he's got. I've read on, like, the Wikipedias and stuff like that. I love that as lore. And I was like, yeah, that's really cool. You're like this warp master who, like, is, like, using the warp again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love them. I don't know if I listened to them as audiobooks when I was painting, was the Eisenhorn books.
Oh, I'm listening to those at the moment. I think I'm on chapter 6 or 7 of the third book. Oh, so good.
So good. So yeah, good. They're perfect for me when I'm painting to sit and listen to. So good. Really, really good. Once you start getting into it, I think I just binge them straight through. Is the three or is the four? Is it three?
I think the fourth one is like a collection of short stories about him, I think.
Yeah.
And I know they've got spin-offs, because I think they've got, is it Beckwin?
Yeah.
And I think they've got Ravenna. Ravenna's got a spin-off series as well, which is supposed to be quite good.
Ah, okay. I haven't heard any of those.
Yeah, whenever I got like my Audible credit come up, I'm like, oh, what can I listen to next? And I saw those ones come up as like suggested ones. I was like, oh, okay. Maybe I'll listen to the third Eisenhorn one first, and then maybe...
Yeah, it's just... Yeah, I loved them when they're, like, torturing him with, like, warp power and stuff. And
yeah.
It's really good. I won't spoil that. That might be... People might not have listened to those, but they're brilliant. Really good.
Yeah, really recommend those. Yeah, they're really, really good. It does make me want to go and buy an Eisenhorn model. I desperately... Yeah. In fact, it makes me want to make, like, a little... Imperial agents army with like inquisitors to make like a little band of the Inquisition.
Yeah. It's such good marketing. I mean, as soon as you hear the books, you just want those characters, don't you, in your army? Especially like for me with the sisters, you know, oh, I could have an inquisitor in there as well. You know?
Yeah.
Just start chucking stuff in, don't you? So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, that's one of the nice things because I've got a Xenos army in Votann. I've got my Chaos Knights, so I can kind of bring in demons and stuff like that. And then I've got my Dark Angels, so I can bring in, as much as Dark Angels hate the Inquisition, I can bring them in and stuff like that.
Yeah, I haven't got a Xenos army of my own, actually. So I always, you know, I kind of think, oh, I'm going to start doing something. I did paint a Tau army, but it was a long time ago, and then I kind of think, I just like Eldar. I think that would be the one. Yeah. Just because they've got so many different types of models that you can paint when you take all the different aspect warriors and things. And
You bring Harlequins and Dark Eldar, I guess. So I love Harlequins. Harlequins are my favourite Eldar models. They're amazing.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think they'd have been all right as their own army, but there just wasn't enough models, really, in the range. And from the ones there were, like the Void Weavers, I think it was, that were like the heavy weapon. They just weren't like that good to take. So straight away, one out of the three options was gone, you know. So, yeah, Harlequins are...
They're cool models, but yeah, they definitely need a range extension, I guess.
Yeah, although they're kind of now just...
part of Eldar,
so,
I guess.
Yeah, just a side part of Eldar now, aren't they, really? So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay, just coming back to your painting a little bit. Obviously, you paint to an incredible level. Have you got, or is there like one particular piece of advice that has, that you found has really changed or improved your painting? I'll take whatever tips I can get.
So I'd say, first I'll kind of say, if you're trying to paint a full army project, you know, I guess it's kind of managing yourself, because we all get too excited with buy all the miniatures, build them all, lay them all out. Oh, they look amazing, look like, you know, like a full Dark Angels army, but there's so much detail on it.
Yeah.
And then you start painting, you get too intimidated, you lose the drive, you sell it on eBay, you start again.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily massively going to help, but try and keep it fun, I think, for painting armies. And don't go too crazy. So you can, unless you're painting for a specific award or standard for your army, I kind of would pull it back a little bit on your rank and file troops. Mm. Pick out the things that people's eyes drawn to, you know, so if it's going to be faces or helmets or power weapons, don't worry about, a lot of people love, there's different styles of painting everybody loves, you know. Again, a lot of people see artwork, so they try and edge highlight every single edge.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to destroy your soul quicker than highlighting every single edge. Like underneath edges, back reflection light, and then doing it, you know, three colours. Again, for me, if you use an airbrush, you can do a lot of good contrast there, and then just pick out the upper body and the details.
Yeah.
And I think probably just, like we were saying about the lion, if you get a character and you want to paint it, it's quite intimidating as well with so much detail.
Yeah.
So probably try and work one colour at a time is what I'd suggest, and write your recipe down. So if you're going to work on like a red cape or something, you know, don't worry about the rest of the model and think, oh, that all looks terrible. You know, just get your colours blocked in so you can see where your contrasts are. Get like your dark red in there and just start highlighting up slowly through colours. And the classic one of, like, be patient with it, you know, because people rush. The more it doesn't look how you want it to look, you know, you go faster and you mix colours and then you've ruined it. And yeah, it's kind of, it's just to keep it fun's the main thing for me. If you're not enjoying it and you feel like you're punishing yourself, then it's like everyone's sort of hobby or at the end of the day, isn't it? It's something you do for a bit of fun when you're not at work, get your models out, play a game of 40K or something, so. Definitely keeping it fun. If anyone particularly, you know, wants any practical tips, if they like message you or message me, I'll try and help. But yeah, just broadly speaking, that's it. That's, I don't want to go into too much detail, you know, kind of.
It's solid, but keeping it fun is definitely wrong. So obviously, everyone talks about like the burnout and getting burnout. Yeah. And like that. That happens when you're not having fun. It's when you're kind of just rushing through things and yeah. That rushing tip's good as well, because definitely that's probably something that I've had in the past. Is you, maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but I feel like people get this thing of, oh, I don't want to take a grey army to a table, or I don't want to take a one colour army to a table and play a game with it, because the other person's not going to have fun. To be honest, yes, I enjoy a good paint job, don't get me wrong. I'm there to play a game, so I don't really care all that much. So
I think as well, it's always good to look at other people's work, you know, and see different ideas, but don't try not to compare your work to other people's.
Yeah.
You know, where you look at, you're really happy with something you've painted, and then you see, you go on Instagram and see someone's, and then you, all of a sudden, you hate what you've painted, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that happens, I think, no matter what level you are as well. I could paint something, a character, and be really happy, and then I look at Andy Wardle's.
Yeah.
Instagram, like Andy's Celestine. I remember him sending me a picture of his Celestine, and I was like, I hate my Celestine.
You know, just, it's just Celestine, please.
Oh, it's amazing. I don't know if you've seen Andy's.
It's amazing. Incredible.
Because Celestine being one of my favourite models as well, and then Andy's amazing painting skills on top of it. Yeah. Awesome. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah. No, I've said that to Fletch. If I ever get to the Tabletop Tactics studio, I am stealing the lion. Because I know that almost no one what I do is probably not going to be as good as Fletch's lion, so I will steal it. He's aware of this, but he's going to have to try and stop me when I get there.
Oh, I think you do well to get past Lawrence, to be honest.
That's fair. Yeah, that is fair. Yeah, they're all giant. I'm only like 5'9", so they're all giants to me. So I'm just going to get there like, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Lawrence is pretty tall, to be fair. I had a game against Chef with my sisters a while back on the channel before they moved to the new studio.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to play Lawrence with my Emperor's children.
Okay.
So I went down to Fletcher's and stayed for the weekend. So me and Fletcher and Oogie, David, who's Gizmo Paints on Instagram, are like really good mates, the three of us. So we always try and meet up and we do go-karting and we do Warhammer-y stuff. And so I went down to Fletcher's to stay for the weekend just to kind of hang out a bit, do some go-karting, whatever. And I was supposed to be playing a game with Lawrence. So I drove. So for me to Fletcher's, supposed to be about 4 hours. Two traffic jams. It took me about 7 hours to get there. Dropped my stuff at Fletcher's. We went for something to eat. And then the wife phoned me and said, oh, the dog's not looking very well. So my older retriever's like, he's always been like a sickly dog. He's always had like a bad, I don't know, immune system. So yeah. I was like, all right, no worries, he'll be fine. So she was up all night with him. Then he got rushed to the emergency vet and they thought he was going to die and phoned and told me, like, you need to get home. So I had to phone Lawrence and say, I can't come and play a game today because my dog might die. I need to drive home. So,
God.
Yeah, it was just one of those things that anything that happens in our house that's drama happens when I'm away.
It's always the way.
Lawrence just said, you know, go and sort out what you need to sort out. Like, obviously, that's what's important. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I never got to play him, unfortunately. So,
Next time. Hopefully
we'll get it scheduled in, yeah, with the Emperor's Children. So,
yeah, because he's got his now, hasn't he? We'll say now. He's had them for quite a while now.
Yeah, yeah, he's got an army as well, so we could have an Emperor and Children off, potentially.
Yeah, that'd be cool, yeah. A lot of things on the table.
Yeah, he'd have to go easy on me, to be fair.
Yeah, I heard Lawrence is a fair... He's an alright player. Fairly good one.
I think Lawrence is one of them, you laugh the whole time and have a great time, but... He could destroy. Problem is, I've trash talked him as well.
Yeah, he's going to get you in there and just he's just going to wipe the floor with you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was all joking, but I was trash talking him about it. So, yeah, it could be embarrassing if he wanted it to be.
Yeah, I did see when he was sort of playing properly, playing competitively, he was like, I think he was only like behind money in a lot of the sort of competitive scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is mad, absolutely insane.
Considering he wasn't really taking those like sort of meta lists really either, Lawrence. I think he could pick up most armies and do pretty well with it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably harder now when you've got to learn so many rule sets, but like when he was playing mainly Drakari and then when he went to Grey Knights, considering Grey Knights weren't in a good spot then.
Yeah.
Like the rules weren't very good, you know. They were good initially and then they kind of dropped for a long time. But you're still doing pretty well with those armies, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, we'll move away from Warhammer as a sort of a game hobby type stuff. Let's talk more on the sort of community side. You've been around making content for quite a long time. A lot longer than I sort of realised. Like, I mean, I came into the hobby, like say, not like 7 years ago, something like that. But you've been making content on your Instagram for like 5 years now, something like that.
Yeah, I mean... So when I was still in the fire service, I started painting models for myself. I mean, I've been painting before that, but I wasn't really on social media or anything. So when I started on social media, I was still fire service, painting on the side type thing. Then I ended up doing a little bit of commissions for friends and stuff like that. So
okay.
I did do some commissions, and it was Poseidon then, but it was almost like a soft launch. There was no, like, it's a business. It was kind of just, oh, that was the name of it. I've always absolutely loved Greek mythology.
Nice,
So that's where the Poseidon came from. Like, I'm big into my Greek mythology. All my tattoos are Greek mythology and stuff like that. So Yeah, so I kind of did it then. But, you know, I was creating content, but it was sort of intermittent, if you know what I mean. Just kind of here and there with stuff. Whereas it then became properly, let's do this as a business, when I left the fire service and just kind of went for it.
Okay, so is that where you sort of really kicked on with Instagram and tried to really push your Instagram as well as your business?
Yeah, so once I left that and had made the decision, you know, like I want to do this full time, I want it to be a business that grows and, you know, pivots and model. Yeah, so then I think I got a bit more serious with trying to be a bit more regular with your content, trying to paint a variety of models. And lately I've been, because you have all these ideas of things you're going to do, but that your time gets sort of swallowed up so quickly with the amount of admin you do behind the scenes and then sitting painting and then, you know, messaging clients back and pictures and videography. And so I'm kind of like, that's all under control now. We're getting there.
It's like two years, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a big learning curve. You make a lot of mistakes, you know. You ask a lot of advice on different... You buy a lot of equipment that you don't need or equipment that you then... You wish you just bought the better equipment straight away, you know, and stuff like that. So, yeah. And then you kind of... That's where the point I'm at now, really. So it's... Everything's calmed down. So now I want to do a bit more in terms of... Even though some of the videos, like I did, like we had like the showcase video that went out last week with the Orc Army that we worked on, the amount of, you know, time that goes into that video versus the amount of sort of it gets seen, it's kind of, whereas you could put just a picture on and it could get as many likes and things like that. But I enjoy doing it and enjoy kind of showing what the models were. So that, yeah, I do enjoy kind of getting into that side of creating a bit more content, I think.
Okay. So is that something you think you'll sort of lean into more, is to do the YouTube stuff? Because you posted like March of this year, something like that, but then obviously you've not done much on YouTube. So is it something you think you'd like to do more of as the business, like say, kind of stabilizes?
Yeah. So I did like a few, see, unfortunately, sometimes, so I was doing like trying to do a video every couple of weeks, you know, a little painting. So I did like how to paint like an easy army level non-metallic metal, how to do like an easy industrial base. So I was doing them on Instagram and then putting them on YouTube, but I wasn't really making you. Whereas this one was a bit more of a YouTube content. Don't get me wrong. I literally don't care how many views it gets or how many likes, because you've just got to start somewhere, no matter whether you're starting from where I am, where the business is, you know, now, and I'm doing it, or whether you're just someone who thinks, I want to start a YouTube channel. Sometimes, if you wait to do it perfectly, you could wait forever.
Yeah.
One thing my wife said to me is, you're better with imperfect action than no action at all, you know, so.
Yeah, spot on. Yeah.
Just start doing it, if you're enjoying it, and you learn as you go, don't you, things get better, so.
Yeah,
I'd like to do more. That's kind of hopefully on the cards.
Nice. I really look forward to that. Yeah, I watched the sort of showcase. It was really cool. Really, really cool. It's nice to see. Obviously, you get Instagram and stuff like that, and you get the little reels and stuff like that, but it's not the same as like a proper, here's the army. That's really cool. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I like that. I totally agree. I really enjoy doing it. I guess it's attention span with a lot of people now where...
Yeah.
We do that, and if it doesn't grab somebody in the first 10 seconds, it's like that's it. Or they watch the first. I mean, that showcase video on YouTube's only about 7 minutes, but I'm sure a lot of people probably get about 3 to 4 minutes in. And then that's kind of just the nature of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I've ever have had a reel that goes beyond an average of like 5 seconds. Most of my reels are about 10 seconds. Yeah, and the average watch time is 5 or 6 seconds.
It's crazy, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's just where we are, isn't it? But so it might not, you know, get as much interest, but I really enjoy doing it. It's quite a challenge to try and improve on, because I like showing the armies and the models on Instagram. That's cool, obviously. But I quite like, you know, the cinematics of showing the army on a battlefield. Looks really epic, like kind of a bit more visual, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's absolutely, it's really cool. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's one of those things. Obviously, starting this podcast, I've kind of experienced it a little bit, but it's the amount of work that goes into that sort of stuff is quite surprising. And then when you're getting like low numbers, you're kind of like, you kind of like, it's not about the numbers. I'm enjoying making this. That's what it is about.
Yeah.
And it'll grow. Like, I mean, you've already got 20 odd thousand subscribers, followers on Instagram. It's obviously going to grow. So,
Yeah, but that's it for anyone, you know, who's thinking of doing a YouTube or an Instagram. You can look and go, well, they've got 20,000, they've got 50, and I've just got 7 likes, you know, but everybody started there. Everybody started with the first video on YouTube that they look back now and they cringe watching it, you know, and listening to your own voice on camera. And I find, you know, I film myself and I blink about 3 million times on camera, and then you kind of relax and just talk normally, you know, so. Everyone's going to start somewhere.
Yeah, I'm doing it now. I'm going back through, obviously, all of these podcasts, I record all the video with it. I've gone back all the way to the first episode, and I'm editing that video. And I was just like, I am so static in the way that I talk. I'm so nervous. Whereas now I feel like I'm a lot more relaxed and kind of just having a chat. Yeah, it is a time thing.
I was like that when I did my battle report with the TT guys, with my sisters. I played against Chef. And I met them all, and, you know, you're absolutely fine. And as soon as that camera points at you, you're like a rabbit in the headlights, like trying to memorize your list and do your list. And I think, I don't know how many, they probably ran out of film the amount of times. It's like a tongue twister trying to say. And then I played the game. Like, I was fairly good with my sisters at the time, but I was more just not even really thinking about how I was playing the game, you know.
Yeah.
Just kind of rabbit in the headlights of try and know what you're doing type thing. And you kind of get there, don't you? You relax as you get through it.
It becomes the norm. It's just a different thing, isn't it? It's not, most people haven't been in front of a camera and done anything like that. So yeah, it's just something new, and you're kind of like, how do I act? And kind of go, you start to enjoy it. You start to have a bit of fun. You start to go, oh, this is easy. This is just,
there's just a
thing there.
Yeah. It's different. Yeah, it's totally different as well, isn't it? Because I found when I was in the fire service and I was happy enough, and, you know, you're confident in your job.
Yeah.
But then when I went to being an instructor, so you're not you're not sitting in the front of a fire engine now with 5 guys and doing this, that. You're now in the front of a classroom with 20 students. Yeah. But they don't know anything about what you're – you could tell them anything, they'll just nod. But you're still standing there, like, nervous, you know.
Yeah.
But I went into that job on purpose because I knew that was like something I wasn't very good at. So I thought, I applied for that job and got it. And then I said to my wife, what have I done? Like, oh no. So then like that Monday, we had a new course starting. I had like 5 lectures to deliver and I just didn't sleep because I was like stressed, worried about it. So then once I was comfortable with that and absolutely fine, then I'm talking about some plastic models to a camera and I go to bits. Like, it's really, really weird.
Yeah, really, it's a new thing. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I trained as a teacher before I was an engineer, and I now have the philosophy of, if I was able to stand in front of 30 kids and take the crap that they gave me, I can do that in front of anybody. It doesn't matter, because generally as an adult, people aren't there to take the piss out of you. Which is completely different when you're teaching secondary school children.
Yeah.
If the teacher makes a mistake, they will pick up on everything and let you know about it.
Yeah. I remember what I was like when I was that age. And you think you're dead funny in front of your mates, don't you?
That poor teacher at the front is just like, fuck sakes, I've heard this 30 times before.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And it was I've taken that skill forward, and that has definitely helped me, but... Yeah, new things are always scary and a little bit difficult. But
that's it. As soon as you sort of rip the plaster off and start, all of a sudden you've done it once, haven't you? It just gets easier. So
yeah, it's just that practice. Yeah, doing it 1,000 times makes it easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I mean, I've got a question that I'm interested in. I've had a few people sort of ask through me. That's not how to say that. I've had a few painters on, and one of the questions that always gets passed through is like, how have you built that business as a commission painter? How have you built that clientele? And sort of, have you got any sort of advice for people looking to do something similar?
So if it's specifically for, like, you know, commission painting and things like that, so I've just like I say, you know, it's not going to be perfect, but take your time. So when you start commission painting, I would say you're not going to necessarily make much money in terms of, like, if you try and make a good hourly rate out of it, and that, like, when you're not necessarily that confident a painter, then you're either going to rush the project because you're thinking, I need to make X an hour, so that means I've got 40 hours to spend, so I need, and it's not going to be done because you're not necessarily good enough, or you'll find you could paint models and be really confident, and I had this as well, so painting models, absolutely fine. As soon as I did my first commission, I'm sitting in my house on my own painting a model, and you're like nervous, like almost shaking, because it matters, you know, for somebody else.
Yeah.
So I'd say to build it, consistency and quality is like the things I try and sort of aim for. So, like, all the projects that we do, you know, they have to be to a certain standard. So we don't do like a tabletop standard, which, you know, like a 3-colour minimum or anything like that. We don't do it. Some people do, that's fine. Or if you want to paint it yourself, or if someone wants to start doing that, you know, but just do it well, whatever you're going to do. But you have to kind of get over the fact of it's took me this many hours. I've painted models before, you know, and I've costed it out as how long it's going to take and this, that and the other. And I've spent 20 hours painting a model and I've hated it and I've stripped it.
Yeah.
You know, so all of a sudden then you're working for half the money, you know?
Yeah.
But you get to a point where you make less mistakes. But just consistency with, make sure any projects you do are done well, and make sure that you're consistent in terms of, you know, take good photographs. So many people, when they do models, they paint a really good model, but, you know, it's like a spud cam where you can't see, you just, and I've done it before. I remember one of the projects I painted early on was a custodes army. And if you look at the pictures of them, they just look like golden red. Oh, they look like nothing. But actually, I spent ages on, like, the robes and blending, and they looked really, really good in the hand. But they looked terrible on screen because my pictures and the light, I didn't kind of have any consistency with.
Yeah. Yeah, so, that's something that I need to improve on. I'm quite proud of a couple of more models now. But yeah, I still need to get a proper picture set up. It makes a huge difference. You know, the moment you've got a good picture, you're like, yeah, why can't I do that every time?
But I also find, I think when people are taking pictures of the models, I mean, I don't use light boxes. I've tried them in the past and didn't really get on with them.
Okay.
So I've got like a photo area set up over there that's like a big booth, like not a booth, but okay. I just didn't really get on with light boxes myself.
Yeah.
And I find a lot of people, if you've got the model in the hand and you try to take a picture, they'll put way too much light on it, on everything, you know.
Yeah.
It's like overexposed. I actually remember watching it on somebody's, I don't know if it was like Miniac or something, you know, somebody like that I watched. Mm. I can't remember who it was, but it was like, well, if you're taking a picture with your iPhone of a model, as soon as you hold it up, you know, you get that little square that it's going to focus.
Yeah.
And it adjusts the brightness. So first thing to do, try this, like, have one light on the model, nothing crazy. Get that, hold it, tap it so it focuses, and then drag down, you know, to reduce that exposure.
Yeah.
Then take your photograph. And it's, you get them, because you can always then up the exposure if you want to when you edit it, but just because I think your phone's set, you know, for taking photographs of people and nature and these kind of things, so it automatically ramps up that exposure. So, yeah, try tap on the thing and drag it down the way and go from there. It makes a huge difference.
Interesting, yeah.
If you do not, I mean, we use cameras and things now, so obviously it's a bit different, but
yeah.
If you're starting out commission painting or something like that, so, yeah, take your time and try not to worry about the hourly rate. At the same time, you've got to value your time, you know.
Yeah.
Don't rush out and buy loads of equipment. Try and work with what you've got initially. You know, an iPhone, like, cameras on that are as good as any camera we had like 5 years ago, you know. So
yeah,
initially just get some good light, one good light, one good, like, your iPhone camera, and go from there.
Ooh, yeah, that's good advice. Yeah, I mean, I've just seen the Pixel 8, so I've got the Pixel 3A. That's the life I'm living. Yeah. Yeah, so the Pixel 8 has got like a 30-odd megapixel camera on it. I was like, that's better than most of the cameras I've ever seen in my life. That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, if you're just starting out, you don't want to run out and buy a macro lens and this, you know, you're £900 for just a lens, you know, and you haven't even got a camera to go with. Like, you can build up to that and then get yourself some nice lenses and things to go with it. But yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I've chatted in the past with like Lawrence for advice on things. And, you know, when I was building, he'd say to me, don't try and buy everything. Like,
yeah.
You can buy loads of kit. You don't know how to use it, half of the kit. If you're not like really, I'm not massively techie in terms of videography and all that. That's what I'm trying to work on and learn at the moment. And you put off learning new skills, I think, don't you? Because it's hard and because you're not very good at it at the start, so you kind of put it off.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd kind of definitely that. Don't rush out and spend all your money on loads of kit that you don't know how to use, hoping it's going to make a business, you know?
Yeah. Well, like I say, you don't know how to use it, and so you probably end up using it badly, and then reflects badly, and so you're probably going to get less business. So,
or you could buy a really expensive camera, and yeah, you'll get some good photos, but you're probably using 5% of that, you know, the capacity of that equipment, when actually you could do that on your phone.
Yeah.
You saved yourself that money because you've not got the jobs coming in yet, or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. No, solid advice. I mean, on advice, I imagine that you get quite a lot of messages through Instagram and elsewhere for advice on how to do certain painting, things like that. And have you sort of considered expanding beyond the sort of commission based? Obviously, we talked about YouTube, but in terms of like tutorials, because obviously I've got a lot of people who do like tutorials or classes or like Patreon. Have you sort of thought about expanding that way, or is that somewhere that you would look to expand?
So again, this was kind of, you know, something that I kind of plotted would be on the timeline. And we're now getting to that point where I'm freed up enough with things that I can do some of these things.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of getting better with using the equipment and knowing what I'm doing and all that kind of stuff. But still learning, still make mistakes and still make some horrible videos that you delete.
Don't we all?
We get a lot of messages, you know. And we actually get quite a lot of messages saying, have you got, do you do painting classes? Do you do online one-to-one tuition? So it's definitely on the horizon of something, whether it's a Patreon or something, you know, that's, you know, painting classes, or whether it's online tuition one-to-one and like a Patreon, you know, like a, putting out articles and videos and things like that. Cause I love doing that kind of thing as well. Like, I really enjoy painting models. I really enjoy teaching. That was one of the things at the end when I was in the fire service. I loved going to fires and all, but I absolutely love teaching new recruits. Yeah. You know, when we got them in and you had them for 12 weeks and see them, like, it's quite rewarding. So I enjoy teaching, which I didn't really know that about myself because I hated standing up in front of groups of people. But I actually really enjoy that part of it now. So, yeah, it'd be really cool to do Patreon and paint some, not just, you know, different levels, because not everybody wants to be able to paint like a...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. Everybody does want to be able to paint like a... What I mean is not everybody wants to sink the time into painting.
Yeah.
Or put in the years it takes to be able to paint like some of the top people can, you know. Some people just want tuition on how do I paint my army and how do I put transfers on? How do I, you know? So
yeah,
it's definitely it's something that's been recently kind of come to the front of my attention to be interested in. So it could be on the horizon potentially.
I look forward to seeing it. Yeah, I'll keep my eye out for that. That's good. That's cool. I mean, before this, we were chatting over on Instagram. You would you'd like to set up a podcast? What would that be about?
Yeah. I mean, again, like doing this, it's just good fun, isn't it? Sometimes painting models and things can be quite sort of an isolated task when you're doing things. So not even necessarily chatting about Warhammer all the time. Me and Fletcher used to do, again, it's workload that kind of killed her, but me and Fletcher used to go live on a Tuesday night on Instagram quite often.
Yeah.
and we'd end up talking about what's your favourite biscuit. We wouldn't plan anything, you know, we'd just talk. We were painting, Fletch was doing like his Heresy Marines, and I was supposed to be doing Heresy Marines, but every week I'd bring something random, and he'd say, where's your Imperial Fists at? So yeah, it'd just be fun, you know, to kind of do, they're two things that I've kind of looked at for a long time, and just not had the capacity or maybe the capability to, and that, like I said, we're going back to it, quality and not overstretching yourself. You don't want to put some, it's different putting something out there where it's not perfect, but you're learning, you know, and it's going to improve. To me, that's fine.
Yeah.
Whereas putting something out that's like, you know, substandard to what you want it to be.
Yeah.
That's obviously a different thing. So Patreon and podcast are definitely something that's in my eye line, I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, podcasting is really fun. Weirdly, it kind of links back into what you said about equipment. This mic was probably the thing that I was like, yeah, I really want to get a proper mic, because if I'm going to have a podcast, I want the sound quality to be good. So I'm going to have a proper mic rather than being like, I'm just going to use the one that's on like an iPhone, whatever, headphones and stuff like that. So I guess, yeah, it is a lot of fun. I love making a podcast. The editing is less fun. That's for sure. I think that perfection thing, when I started the podcast, I was kind of like, really driven to get out every filler word and every gap. Make it absolutely perfect. I think as I've sort of come along, it's kind of like, no, just take it easy. And it's a weird one. Like when you're putting stuff on Spotify, you can cut things out really easily because it makes no difference. Nobody knows. If you cut it properly, nobody knows there's a gap there. Mm-hmm. Now I'm editing the videos, I'm like, why did I make that cut? Because now it looked really awkward when somebody goes from like saying one thing and it just jump. They jump. Yeah. I'm like, that's going to look really awkward. So I'm actually having to go back to some of my earlier stuff, re-edit the audio to go onto that video. Because I'm like, why was I such an idiot? Like,
doing
it too perfectly has made it really hard for me later on down the line.
I think as well, like you say, if we were having a conversation, sitting having a coffee, you know, you stutter and you say random things. Like, it's just conversation. So I don't think people even notice it. I quite like when I've got a podcast on and I'm driving, that you're just listening to a chat. It's not too formal. It's not too polished, you know. It's as long as it's engaging, I think, you're interested in what people are talking about.
Right, that's recording again. Although I didn't realise where we were. What were we talking about? Technology or something.
Probably smooth editing of videos.
Smooth editing videos, yeah. Just as we're saying, I'm going to leave all this in the edit as well, just on Spotify. I'm going to pull this in just as proof that not everything goes perfectly. And sometimes you just got to edit through it. It's fine.
It's not as easy as just play and go. There's a lot that goes on in the background to kind of put that product out there, isn't there?
Yeah, that sure is. It's something that really surprised me coming into this. I was like, oh yeah, it probably won't take that long. I wasn't stupid enough to be like, yeah, I can do audio and video editing at the same time. They're two new skills. I'll just do the audio stuff. So all of these are going out on Spotify first. I kind of wish I'd taken that jump earlier on to do video editing. Yeah. It felt scary, but now I'm doing it. I'm like, why did I think this was scary?
It's actually different. You put it off, though, don't you? Because it looks scary to learn a new skill.
Yeah.
Because you know you're not going to be great at it to start. So you kind of put it off, and then a year down the line, you think, I mean, how many people wanted to learn guitar at some point and have bought it, sat in the corner, and then you sell it?
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we can kind of move on from the community side, I think, now, and let's talk about real life. We've talked about you being a firefighter at this point. That's really cool. Like, you came out of the army, was that an active choice, or is that just something you thought, that's cool, let's do this?
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I did the army, and then I wanted to go to the army, and I wanted to go away into different countries and things like that, and then I wanted to get into, like, the bodyguarding, so you had to pass different courses. So it's quite really tough to get into. So then I did it, and then did different tours and things as well, but then, like, I had my daughter at the time.
Okay.
So it changes your perspective, you know, on
how
much you're away for starters and things like that. But then after that, when I was kind of looking at other career paths, I mean, my dad was in the fire service as well.
Okay.
He did his full career and retired. Well, I guess from coming from that kind of job, I'd have struggled to do a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
That was kind of maybe like office based or something like that. So I needed something that was a little bit more stimulating type thing, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just kind of went for it, and again, went through my basic training with the fire service. Like, you just don't even know what's happening. Like, you get exposed to all these things. But I absolutely loved it, you know. Like, if I hadn't have jumped to Poseidon, I'd have done that for my full career, basically. I loved the job. But this was just the right time for me to kind of do my... I hadn't got, like, you know, as high as I could go, but I feel like I'd achieved everything I was happy to achieve in that sort of job and part of my life, that I was, like, ready for a new challenge and to go do something else.
Yeah. I mean, do you miss it?
I don't miss it. Like, I loved it. Like, I genuinely loved, you know, loved the job, loved going to fires, loved, like, all of that. Not that people's houses are on fire. I have to clarify that.
Yeah.
Firemen don't love that your house is on fire, but firemen do love going to fires. Like, it's just that way, because you trained for it to go in there and do that job, you know? So no, the only reason I don't miss it is just because I'm so happy doing what
I do. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a great life. I love, like, work. Don't get me wrong. I think it happens to everyone. I still have nights where I wake up, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning and my work brain clicks in, and that's me awake till, like, I just get up then, like, whatever. Because you're thinking about something, you know, you stress yourself out. Nothing will stress you out as much as it does at 2 a.m. when you're lying in bed and your eyes open. It's like the world's a scarier place at 2 a.m.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like you can't do anything about it. It's like,
that's it, yeah. Yeah, whether it's a health thing, a work thing, you know, if you think about, oh, I've got, like, I feel weird, like, at 2 a.m, you're convinced you're dying, whereas in the daytime, it's fine. Like, there's people around, it's daylight, there's hospitals open. So when I think about work at night time, like, the brain, I think that's just the thing of running your own business as well. Like, everybody, I think, has that, because you just want to keep going and keep growing. So
I think it's part of, like, the passion of doing what you're doing. And for me, that was always something that showed me that I was passionate about what I was doing. I'm notoriously bad for doing my best thinking in the shower. That's where I do all of my best thinking. And I find that if I'm enjoying a job, I'm spending 90% of my time probably thinking about it, even when I shouldn't be. To be fair, that's now, like, Warhammer's taken over almost all of that time. But yeah, generally, in a good job, I feel like that's what drives it, is that passion for it. You always want to improve.
Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean, it's a good thing, just not at 2 a.m. when it hits you. Yeah. But someone kind of told me, who was, like, a CEO of a big company, who said, I remember talking to him about it, and he said he had the same thing. So what he did, he had a notepad and pen.
Yeah.
On his bed. So as soon as he woke up at 2 a.m, he'd write everything down, and then he found he could go back to sleep.
Yeah, get it out of your head. You can do it in the morning. Yeah.
Put it on that piece of paper. I'm going to action that as soon as I get up, you know, so.
Yeah.
I'd be writing, like, highlight the lion's cape with mint green or something.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, mine's always about podcast ideas these days. Like, who can I get on, and what can I chat with them about, and what would be the next thing to come after the podcast, or how could I sort of go beyond it? It's one of those passion things, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but you've just got to kind of have faith, because it will naturally grow where you can't see other things. You just get better, don't you? And they come to you, these different ideas and, you know, different avenues to kind of expand, or your business evolve. Like everybody's businesses did through COVID and stuff, you know?
Yeah, so, for sure. It's one of the things that as you're living it, you're kind of like, oh, I could have done that differently, or actually that would be a really good thing to do as a bit of a spin-off or stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so apart from being a firefighter and being in the army, everything like that, you're in Warhammer probably near constantly. One of the questions I didn't actually ask earlier, do you actually get any time to paint properly and play properly for yourself? We already have established that you haven't played 10th, so do you actually get much time for yourself in hobby?
I don't really give myself much time, to be honest. So I guess like 8th edition, 8th and into, like me and Fletcher and David used to meet and play quite a lot and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'd go to the little gaming club and I'd get time to paint my own model. So I kind of now, if I want to paint something for myself, so at the minute I'm working on a few projects, but I've also been working on a small squad of salamanders. I'm painting them for myself, or just because I wanted to paint them, really.
Yeah.
So, like, the salamander captain sits on my desk staring at me all day while I work.
Yeah.
And I've set myself a time. So if I'm, I normally get up at like 6 a.m. or something like that. And then, so if I'm working till whatever 6 p.m. or something, I'll be like, right, if I'm finishing at 6, then I'm putting it down at 6.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna pick up that salamander captain from 6 till 7. I'm gonna work on him for 1 hour, and then I'm gonna, you know, walk the dogs and go and get something to eat and stuff. So, and some days you get to 6 and you go, nah, it's not happening. Like, you know, some days you think, oh yeah, I'm just gonna paint his face. I'm gonna pick him up and I'm gonna paint his face. Not that that's like an easy thing to do, but so yeah, I don't get loads of time. I mean, I guess that's the good thing now. When I did my Emperor's Children army, like, I was just working silly hours because I wanted to get that army done. And yeah. Retreat. So I was doing all my commission stuff through the day, but I'd get up probably, I was getting up at like 6 a.m. and I'd paint 6 till 8 on them and then work all day. And then, but you know, just to get it done, I was working like for all the weekends. But at least now I've got an army, I've got two armies, you know, that if I want to play, I can.
Yeah.
But I also feel like because I enjoy painting other people's models as much as my own now.
Yeah.
I almost don't need to give myself that time.
Yeah.
So if someone books in, you know, really, I'm like, yes, like I'm going to paint Angron or whatever, you know. So
yeah.
I get as much joy out of painting that. Again, likes of doing Beard Zion Warriors and doing that load of skulls. Like, didn't even feel like work doing it, you know. I was kind of. And then when I finished it, I was just really excited because I was down there seeing Fletcher, so I just took it to the studio. So I was super excited to just, you know, give it to Beard and let him see it and get him to play it and stuff. So, yeah, like the satisfaction of what you want out of the hobby changes a little bit, I guess.
Makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense. Okay, well, that was pulling back to all, man. Let's get back to your life. Is there much you do sort of outside of the hobby to chill out or to sort of really detach yourself from your job and Warhammer in general?
So it's changed recently. This year I've kind of started with my first old man hobby this year. So before that, I still go to the gym quite a lot and we do a lot of walking and biking and I was doing a lot of CrossFit and things.
Okay.
And this year I started playing golf.
Oh, you're on the golf train. Yeah.
So I started playing golf, and I absolutely love it, to be honest.
Yeah. Nice. Awful at golf. Absolutely awful at golf.
I was terrible when I started, and I'm not much better now. I don't get to play a lot because work and stuff, but
yeah,
I can finish work. There's a driving range that's less than half a mile from my house that shuts at 8 p.m., so I can finish, you know, and go and hit 50 golf ball, that clears my head for the day. Because when you're doing that, you don't think about anything else.
Yeah.
You know? So it gives you a little bit of a switch off. Me and my wife, we train and go to the gym a lot together and lift weights. She owns a gym and personal trainer and things like that. So it helps when you've got those mutual hobbies, you know, that you can do. Yeah. Otherwise, I'd be painting all the time and golfing. <It's> like, you never see each other, but that's it really. We just kind of, yeah, we like training, we like our hill walk because we live in the Lake District, we do a lot of hill walking and stuff like that. So golf's the new one this year.
It's fairly, I think the lakes are pretty good for golf as well.
Same. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just the British weather, isn't it? You've got to kind of keep an eye on. But
yeah, my work's got a golf course like next to it. So when I'm walking between buildings, I just see people playing golf. I'm like, I'm quite jealous because it's just the middle of the work week and you're out playing golf. What the hell?
Yeah.
But then when it's raining, I'm like, why are you out in the rain?
This is insane.
Like, what are you doing? People do it.
I know. I kind of just try and do it for a bit of a enjoyment. Like when it was the summer and it was, you know, when it was getting light at like 5 a.m.
Yeah.
I'd go at 5:30.
Nice. Yeah.
And I wouldn't like be out for hour, maybe do an hour, you know. But it was like the sun was up, you're in a t-shirt, there's like deer and stuff running across. Like for me, like, it's just like a walk, but I'm taking this ball with me. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, it kind of gave me a little bit of clarity. And it's a good place to be and just think about work and think about stuff in terms, you know, but not in a stressed environment of 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Where the monster under the bed's going to get you and stuff. So,
yeah, nice. Okay. That's it. That's kind of the last. Last core question that I've got. I do have one last question to ask. If you could pick one person in the community, don't have to be on Instagram or anything like that, could just be sort of a friend or something like that, and they were the only person that you could play Warhammer with for the rest of time, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's interesting. I think, so the main people I've kind of played with is Fletch. And it's David, who's Gizmo. Who's, you might have seen, he's big into his Iron Warriors, and he did his Perturabo thing.
Really? That Perturabo is completely off topic. That Perturabo is ridiculous.
Really?
Absolutely ridiculous.
Seeing him, how much time, we've got a WhatsApp group, like the three of us, and seeing how much time you put into it, you know, working towards it. But yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, he picked possibly one of the hardest models he could have picked for a non-metallic metal entry.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good luck to him there. But, I think I'd probably pick him to play.
Oh, although, Fletch would
be good. Fletch gets too serious. He can't help himself. He loves it. He can't help it. We've had some good games, to be fair, though. One particular good game against Fletcher, we'll be delighted I'm telling you this, but we played, I think it was four of us, and we went to Warhammer World for the weekend, and Fletch had Tau, and Tau were in a bad spot where they were just losing all the time.
Excellent.
So there was four of us, and we like drew straws for who was going to play who, and I got Fletch, and I had my sisters, and he had his Tau. So he was like, oh, this isn't like great for me. Sisters were pretty good at the time as well, Miracle Dice and everything. So I went first. And whatever happened, I got to a point where all my sisters like dropped down, ready to charge in, and I had Miracle Dice and everything, and somehow I failed all of the charges, like everything. God. So all my sisters have landed, not made contact, and are just staring at all Fletcher's battle suits.
Gun line, yeah.
And he had like the 9 crisis suits with like the mask.
Disgusting.
So on his next turn, he killed probably 60% of my army. Like, crushed it. And he was as happy as I've probably seen him. And then from there, I managed to beat him.
Oh, nice.
It was like, I don't know how it happened. And it was like I'd robbed him. He was absolutely in shock. So it was brilliant. So I've got that one with Fletch, and I've got a good one with Gizmo as well. So we went to No Retreat, and I think we play quite a lot, so you don't want to play your mates, like, you know, when you've got a Gibraltar. So we both won our first 3 matches, so we played each other in like the quarter final or whatever.
Yeah.
So I had my Emperor's Children and he had his Iron Warriors, and he had the Greater Brass Scorpion. So we were discussing it and playing it, and the Emperor's Children can make you fight last and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I can't remember exactly what happened, but I had like 1 command point left, so I didn't have enough to like make him fight last or whatever it was at the time. So he was like rubbing his hands and absolutely loving it. Like, this was a key point of the game. And I realised, so when you go to No Retreat, you get a set of dog tags that's got like your name and army. They do like those boxes. So you've got the dog tag with your name, and you've got another dog tag that you can cash in at any point during the event for an extra command point.
Ooh, okay.
So I was thinking, I can make that Brass Scorpion fight last year. And he doesn't know that I've remembered. So it came to his turn, moved everything. I used my command point. It's just one of those, you know, brilliant moments of like gaming. And he like ran across the room to tell Fletcher what I'd just done to him. And it was brilliant. It was, and I went on to win the game, and it was really good. Nice. We just had a laugh, for three of us. We played like, that's what I love with like the board games, you know, those moments.
Yeah.
When we were at Fletcher's, the three of us were playing through like the Hero Quest board game.
Yeah, nice.
And I was like the Dungeon Master and them two, and it was just the stupidest things happen in these games where it's as long as I roll anything but a two, you're rolling a two, like it's happening, isn't it? So it was brilliant where they were like leaving each other to die and abandon. So yeah, we just have such a laugh. It's, yeah, you can't beat it for me, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah. A game with dice with friends is, yeah, it's the perfect thing. Bit of randomness.
Yeah,
great. Well, that was it. That was my last question. I really appreciate all the answers and your time. I do really, really appreciate it. It's been such fun. I hope you've had a nice time too.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for having us on, and for you working till this time of night. People won't know what time it is, but it's pretty late, so...
Yeah, we're getting on for 10 o'clock at night at the moment.
Yeah.
This is fairly standard recording time. Most people that listen know this by now, unless I'm speaking to an American, in which case it's much later. But yeah, no, it's been a pleasure. If people want to find you, there's a plethora of ways. Obviously, you've got your Instagram, so your Poseidon miniature painting. There's the Facebook, which is James Hamill painting, mini painting. James Hamill mini painting.
The business page is Poseidon miniature painting, and then mine's James Hamill mini painting, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously you've got your website as well, which is a really cool website. Go and get quotes in, definitely. Oh. Free quotes.
So, The website's actually going to be massively revamped soon, so we should have a cool new website. Because we've painted a lot more models since then, you know, so there's a lot more pictures and cool stuff to go on there. So yeah, it should all be new. Everything's getting, I'm getting time now to have a second look at everything, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So.
Oh, cool. Nice. It's a little extra. And then your YouTube, where you're going to be posting more Super Saiyan painting over there as well, aren't you? So,
yeah. So if you're going to do anything, subscribe to YouTube, because it's just sad at the minute.
the 7 videos or something on there. You're doing well there. So
there's only one real video. The other ones are kind of shorts that have been clipped from Instagram, I think. But yeah.
It is a good video, though. It is a really top-notch video, so people should go and watch it anyway.
Yeah, there's going to be more to come, because I love making videos and chatting about Warhammer and stuff. So yeah, but it's been great to just sit and chat about random Warhammer things.
That's the pleasure of this podcast is doing that. Luckily, it's one of those podcasts where me having a bad voice doesn't matter too much, because I just ask you to talk for me. It works out quite well.
Yeah, I've talked at you for a while, I think.
That's the point of the podcast. People say this all the time. Like, oh, I'm really sorry for talking too much. I'm like, no. That's the whole point. I made this podcast so I barely have to talk, and I just get to listen to people's stories about Warhammer. I love it. It's the best. In fact, there's my advice on making a podcast, is do as little as you can to actually talk. Just make other people talk for you and do the work. It's much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, get some cool guests on. It's the best way. I hope everyone else has enjoyed the podcast, and thank you for joining the podcast as always. I really appreciate all the really nice messages and stuff like that, and people seem to be really, really into it at the moment. I'm loving it. If you did like it, please subscribe, review, do all the good stuff, please. If you want to get in touch, you're more than welcome to. You can obviously go and get me on Instagram or Threads. So if you look for First Rank Fire Podcast, I'll be over there. Yeah, thank you so much for listening again, and we'll see you next time. Bye.